You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I think he's the philosopher of football.
I'd like to have some more derbies.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory. We're trying to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in Midtown Manhattan. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer. Back, Susanna Collins. David Goss is here as well, the voice of the Nations League. You like that? Yeah, yeah? I'm going to make this stick, Dave. It is going to stick, all
Listen,
right?
Listen, I don't care... If it was true, if you said it, then I'd be happy about it. But you just say things.
Well,
doesn't help me.
Cool. Bobby Warshaw is here too. He says things as well. We have decided from down on high that we will do a mailbag show once a month.
For sure. Every time you
decide, has doubts.
Every time you decide we will do X amount of times, we do something once to twice, and we never do it again. And then you're the one when I bring it back up where you're like, we don't have time for that. No one cares. We're not going to do that. Why are you bringing that up?
I'm a little bit fickle. I'll give you that right now. We got a big show coming up. Leo Messi to Inter Miami is done. No, it's not. It's not done. It's not done at all. It might be possible. So that's something we're
going to talk. Imagine how many people would watch this show if we announced.
Oh, my God. Stop.
We should just put that in the title. We should just make that the title.
For
just
sure.
Try to get that thing to go viral.
We'll just see how many Barcelona message boards we could destroy.
Exactly. And if we had the analytics on it, how many people would drop out after 30 seconds when they realized that was not actually the case?
Best clickbait ever.
So I'll try to avoid that when I put this show out. It'll be very, very difficult for me. We're going to talk midweek MLS. Mateus Almeida pulling a dad move in Sandy, Utah. He did not have a ticket. He did not have seats. He got pushed out of his a couple times. He was hanging with the fans. Of course, some other games big in the playoff side as well.
Definitely had a seat.
Well, he could have sat up. We'll get to this. We'll get to this. LA Galaxy might be throwing their season away again. Bobby Warshaw's got some thoughts on that. Talk rookie of the year. Biggest games from week 28 and the weekend. It's all important all the way to decision day on, I believe that's October 6th. So we got about a month left. It all runs together for me. At this point, Kim McCauley is going to join us. She is the soccer editor at SB Nation. You've probably read her stuff or heard from her, whether it's on the U.S. men or the women or something else entirely. She has takes on the U.S. and we have the mailbag coming up. But unfortunately, there is... some tragic news to report here, and Jorginho Peter, he is the second goalkeeper for Curaçao, the backup goalkeeper. He died in his sleep Monday morning in Haiti ahead of a match against Haiti. Curaçao had won the first match, and then they drew the second, playing in his honor. So we're all thinking of Peter's family, his friends, Curaçao. Life can be taken away from you awfully quickly, and it's one of those times of the year where we're reminded of that. So, as well, if you were affected by September 11th or know somebody or have been thinking about that, know that we are too, and all of our thoughts go to Jorginho Peter's family, friends, and Curaçao. It's hard to transition off that, so I won't try to do it gracefully. We'll just keep moving here. Yeah. Leo Messi to Inter Miami. Radio and Catalunya is reporting that David Beckham has reached out to Lionel and his team. The financial offer would be huge. Duh. The Barcelona board is apparently aware of it. And here's the interesting part, that there's reportedly a clause in Messi's contract, which is through 2021, and Gerard Piqué confirmed this, that the five-time Ballon d'Or winner could leave Barca for free in June if he wants
understand.
To.
Yeah, is Gerard Piqué a reporter on this?
No, but somebody asked him about it, and he said, yes, we all know that Lionel has this option.
But Piqué actually has seen the contract and knows that?
Piqué knows, as everyone does.
So what you're telling me is David Beckham reached out to Shakira to reach out to Piqué.
Obviously.
To reach out to Messi to put a contract
that was
in front
definitely
of
the line of communication. Yeah.
I don't know if I can. Shakira. Can't do the name.
David.
He would say the English way. She would say the Colombian way.
Potentially.
A little bit different
you never know.
There.
You never
so,
know.
Excitement level 1 to 10.
It would be
Leo
great
Messi,
to learn that Shakira, when she talked to British people, mocked them by pretending to do a British accent.
I choose to pretend that Shakira speaks to David in Bobby Warshaw's British accent. That's just what I choose
That's
to believe.
That's horrifying.
1 to 10, your excitement level.
15.
Yeah, I
think charts.
I think 15 is the right number.
I'm so very excited to bring my mate Leo over. I think it's going to be a great fit for him and his family. Miami's the place to be, you know?
Oh, my
you
God.
You sound like Noel Gallagher. Oh. Like, that's what it is. It finally just hit me, because every time you do
you're
it,
mink.
It feels like someone's here.
Oh, my God. Well, I can't even know the comparison between Bobby's and yours.
Oh,
it's
God.
Like, you know.
It would be...
it's a turd sandwich.
Can I be mean and do this?
Yes.
It would be like comparing Harry Mukhtar to Lionel Messi.
Hanny. Yeah, come on.
Ouch.
You went Ari.
Sorry.
You had full hair.
But that would kind of be like what we were looking at.
I was just going to say mine's from the South.
Yeah, that's what it does sound like.
Yes.
Southern Britain.
For sure. It's a British person that's been marooned in like Central Florida for a long time.
No, he meant like Brighton, like Southern England.
Oh, I thought it was a combination.
He was
of
regionalizing
like
his bad
yes.
accent.
Oh, yes.
Didn't pick up on that one right there. Okay, how about realistic level 1 through 10 that next summer Lionel Messi is an Inter Miami player? They have a DP spot left over right now, I believe. They have two, I think, wait, no, it's one young DP.
Sorry, I don't know if you've ever met Major League Soccer, but if Lionel Messi agrees to a deal with Barcelona, there's a DP spot open, even if they've signed 10 DP.
That's a good point.
That's how it works.
That's actually, you know what? My eyes were kind of closed on that one, and now my eyes are wide open. Should Lionel Messi decide that he wants to leave Barca for free to come to Major League Soccer? Make it happen, Major League Soccer. I think you can do that. Realistic level, what are we going to put it at? That this actually happens. Like Barcelona board says they're going to offer him a lifetime contract, which why haven't they done that already? I guess maybe because he hasn't agreed to it.
It's odd because he has not lost the step, but he's 32.
He would be 33 next June.
So the question is for him, I mean, at what point is... You would assume he will play for someone else besides Barcelona, whether it's back in Argentina, whether it's somewhere else in the world.
Oh, I don't believe that it would be back in Argentina.
I'm saying whether it is.
I would give that the zero on the realistic scale.
He has said that he has an interest in going back and playing for his hometown team. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, he said that multiple times.
That would be the one chance.
Yeah, for sure. But he said it's Newell's, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
He has said that he wants to do that. So whether it's that or coming somewhere else, I don't think he's going to retire a Barcelona player. Is it next year? I don't know. I mean, he didn't look worse this year than he did 6 years ago, so I don't know why. I have zero idea is what I'm trying to tell you.
We need Mateo Messi in Major League Soccer. Mateo, meet Cameron.
Mateo,
Mateo will cheer
for Atlanta City.
Oh, yeah, that's rugged. That's rugged. All right, let's get to the midweek real quick. News we know that you care about, no doubt about it. Major League Soccer is set to meet with the Independent Supporters Council regarding fan code of conduct on September 19th. So all the Iron Front news that's been going around, all the different conversations that have been had, that maybe is a place for those things to be aired out. So stay tuned to news coming out of that. Let's get to midweek riffs. New York City FC.
That's a great shirt, by the way.
You like this one?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. Where'd you get it?
Chambre.
I don't want to tell you.
Yeah, I'm going to order one.
Do you know what I appreciate about this, though? This is perfect, like, summer to fall transition shirt.
Nice.
Yeah, you killed it. Because that's hard. It's tricky. Yeah. It's tricky.
Don't say it. Don't say it, Bobby. Don't out me here. Don't out me here. It's Armani.
You're better than the Old Navy.
Guys, low-key Old Navy does have some good
stuff. Well, you know what? I pay a lot of money for childcare every month.
Oh,
sometimes
wow.
You just have to have a nice-fitting shirt.
God.
I could go to Miami in this shirt.
I dig it, Weeby.
I got a lot of compliments, so that's what I'm counting here.
You would be sweating in Miami.
NYCFC Toronto 1-1. NYCFC did not have Eber. They did not have Maxi Morales. They did not have their three best center backs. Toronto FC had the better of the play. They missed the penalty kick, and they made a penalty kick. It was 1-1, and now Toronto FC, after we didn't really talk about them being like secure for a long time, are 94% to make the playoffs per 538. They haven't lost since August 3rd. The question is, will they stay there? They've got Colorado at home. They're at LAFC. They're at Chicago. Then they got Columbus back at home. 4 games left. Will they get a home playoff game? What do we think? Also, shout out to Greg Berhalter for leaving Josie and Michael back home, because that helped a whole lot.
I think they do.
I think they do, but it's still a letdown. I don't even want to have this conversation because it's still a letdown. Like, I'm not going to pat Toronto FC on the back for getting a home playoff game.
For like falling backwards over DC United, the Red Bulls and the Revs, and maybe Montreal and Orlando.
So I don't even want to have the conversation. Like,
but you also don't want to play them in the playoffs.
1,000%. I've been saying that since day one.
Yeah.
Toronto and FC, the Galaxy, neither team you want to play in the playoffs, but I don't want to pat either of them on the back for getting into the playoffs.
Okay, no back patting. That's fine. Houston won at home. That's the first win in like 7 games for them. Minnesota lost on the road, so we're back to like 2018. Christian Ramirez used to play for Minnesota. Then he didn't play for LAFC. Now he plays for Houston. And I'm going to steal something from The Call-Up, which is a great show. You should go listen to it. So if you are on your podcasting platform right now, head over to The Call-Up and just subscribe and come back to us. Christian Ramirez scored the second goal in this game. Boom. Popped the shirt open, Superman style. Afterwards, he said, no disrespect, didn't mean disrespect. if I was at Allianz, then I wouldn't have done this. But in the situation, I couldn't help myself. I bet he couldn't. Are you here for this, Susanna?
100% here for this. 100% here for this. I love it, too, because in his tweet, he was like, I just couldn't help myself. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, you're just feeling it in that moment.
I just looked at the Loons bench, and my hands just went to the middle of my chest and pulled it apart.
No, why not?
Superman.
Why not?
Anders, how much of this show have we done so far? How much time do we have left? Because I need all of it. Okay, so we've got over half an hour to talk about can you celebrate against your former team?
Yes.
Take it all.
The most important debate in all of soccer.
Obviously.
Let's all go off. Let's find 25 examples. We'll build a graphic, and we'll do this the proper way, as it should be done.
Okay.
This is the most important conversation in the sport.
Done. Okay, so the second most important conversation is how Matheus Almeida is basically imitating all of our
There
fathers.
Is no second most important conversation, Andrew.
I'm sorry.
Celebrate or not celebrate?
You haven't made your graph yet. I'm waiting on the graph.
Okay, I'll go off and do my stuff.
Matheus Almeida suspended.
We'll do an ETR special.
There you go.
Bonus podcast. I'm here for that, David Guest.
We'll have interviews with Jack Wilshere and Luis Suarez.
Emmanuel Adebayor will be ahead of interview.
Perfect.
Matheus Almeida is suspended for the game in Sandy, but he's there, as he should be, and he's not sitting up in the box. We mentioned that. He's in the stands with the fans, but he doesn't have tickets, so he gets kicked out of his seat multiple times.
What he should have done is, if you go stand behind the goal opposite the supporter section, you get the great sunset over the valley, and you get the mountains off to your left. It's the best spot.
I don't know if I was a fan and I saw that he was in my seat. Like, I would have the cojones to be like, excuse me.
Yeah.
The best part was the picture.
I'm pretty sure I have the seat where we both know
like,
that it's Matheus, my seat.
Like, Matheus, they're yours, buddy.
But the guy next to him, so his translator is writing his notes, and the two fans next to them are staring at the notebook and just calling down, being like, Freddie, they're going to swap fullback.
And we already know if he did get kicked out, he would make that assistant coach and translator leave first anyway. Sure.
He looks like, hey, these are my seats. He looks at the guy, he's like, you're in their seats. What the heck, man? Used to embarrass me so much when my dad did this. But Matheus Almeida, a legend, a huge win for RSL at home, and still the West is completely unpredictable. We'll get to that in a second. We talk LAFC because Colorado beat LAFC 2-1 on a PK.
The LA Galaxy.
They beat the LA Galaxy.
Oh, what did I say? LAFC? My bad. Apologies. They beat the LA Galaxy on a penalty
double
kick.
Hit for the Galaxy. They lost the game and they got replaced.
Which is worse?
That's a good point. Is that a PK? Andre Shinashiki late in this game goes down. It's a trip, says the referee per pool reporters. Is it a PK, Bobby? Come on.
Listen, I just want to say I have in my contract that I don't talk about fouls other than instant replay.
Okay.
It's something I very intentionally do. If you're putting me on the spot, no, it should not have been a penalty
kick. Didn't look like there was any contact.
I don't hate that they didn't video review change it, because I understand the idea that even though he didn't make contact, he did put the attacker off balance and it was subjective in the moment. I don't want to be subjective after video review, so I would not have called it a penalty kick. I'm also okay with the fact that they didn't change it.
Okay. Galaxy, according to many, always get the calls. They did not in this match. There was another one Rolf Felcher maybe wanted that he didn't get. Also, I just want to say Andre Shinashiki is a legend for the dye job of everything but the eyebrows. Everything up the eyebrows. Kind of a hype beast Guy Fawkes, I think. Just get him that hat. Get him like the stovepipe hat.
Susanna, are you here for this?
No. Oh. Hard no.
I'm hard yes.
Hard no.
He is so recognizable now. And I think by dyeing his hair and having some good moments late in the season, he is now the favorite for the Rookie of the Year award.
I don't think the hair has anything to do with it.
I think it does, because I know how these things work. And it's basically a popularity play. And it's basically when you look at it, especially in Rookie of the Year, especially lately, who do you recognize? Whose name do you know? Brandon Aaronson's had a great year.
He does stand out. It's true.
Yeah. Hasani Dotson had some good goals, but those are a long time ago. Andre Shinashiki.
So the defensive midfielder is being based on goals.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm not.
Hasani Dotson's in the Rookie of the Year running because of his goals.
Right, don't look at me here. Look at the voters and look at the history of the voters. I am a voter, but my vote would go to Brendan Aaronson, not Andre Shinashiki. Who's going to be with me? Who's on the Aaronson train?
I'm on the Aaronson train because I think that while Andre Shinashiki has had an outstanding season, we were talking about this beforehand, like it's moments that he's had. He's had very, very big moments. But when you look at the actual contribution to the team as a whole, I think Aaronson has had much more of an impact than Shinyashiki. And not to take anything away from him and
his seven goals, two assists. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. I think how many – Aaronson has started how many games?
21 games for arguably the third best team in Major League Soccer.
For me, that's maybe the volumes.
Fourth? Maybe the fourth. Bobby, you got a vote on this? Or is that in your contract?
Brendan Aaronson, for the reasons you just said. He's a key cog in a – maybe not a key cog. He is a consistent cog in a better team.
Okay. Well, we'll see if the dye job has anything to do with this. If he scores a couple goals down the end of the season, that could really matter.
Do you think he'll go full?
No.
He's going to keep the contrast?
Yeah, I think he will keep the contrast. It's very interesting. We'll just put it
also,
that way.
Also, can we low-key throw out that he and the Rapids might decide who makes the playoffs? They play Toronto.
Yeah.
They just beat the Galaxy in Seattle. They play Toronto, Sporting KC, Dallas, and LAFC.
Let's go.
Okay, so I was going to have the Galaxy blown it right now and throw it over to Bobby, but let's do this. Which current non-playoff team is best equipped for next year? The rest of the year, I agree. The Rapids are one to watch.
Yeah, I wasn't saying that.
Not saying that.
No, I was saying for this. It's one of those where it's like when you're out, who's going to beat the playoff teams to screw the standings?
Can I say it about the Rapids?
Sure, go for it.
Here's the Rapids since May 1st, basically since Anthony Hudson, 10-7-4, 1.62 points per game. So if you're looking at the standings and you're trying to track points per game, there are in the Western Conference right now, in the Eastern Conference, there's four teams that can't measure that and are still in. In the Western Conference, everybody but LAFC is not at 1.62 right now. And I know that that's part of the season. It's not the full season. But their defense has got better. They're scoring goals. They are going to have open designated player spots next year. It seems like Robin Fraser has reached this group. There are, like, you know, foundational pieces at outside back and central midfield to a certain degree with some young players. Center back, if they can keep Lalas Abubakar from going back to Columbus. And I hear that he wants to stay in Colorado, which he should because he's playing a ton. If they go make the right signings, Colorado Rapids in what is a up and down Western Conference could be that team.
The hard part is who do they sign?
Yeah, I know.
Right. Like that part of their team is this the general democracy through it? Who is the weak link? Where would you want to upgrade? I don't have an answer to that.
Wing.
Ooh, that's funny because Robin Fraser's one thing was I like my wide players and their ability to take guys one for one. I think they would try and get someone who has an attacking ability in central midfield, whether it's to quote-unquote play as a 10 or just as an 8, like Hwang In-bum, who's just a better passer.
Or also, you have multiple spots here, or almost like, do you go more of a second forward type to like play in and around Kai Kamara?
I think the answer is like a lot of teams right now, and we've talked about this before, they go with any. The way soccer is at this point, you don't need a wing. Like they all interchange so often that you don't need to pick one. You go for the best value, the highest ability in the transfer market.
And I assume they'll go for someone who's young from South America with an ability to sell on.
Yeah.
So you'll probably have someone who is athletic enough and young enough to play across a couple of
don't think they'll spend $8 million on that player, kind of like Brian Rodriguez, who got the goal for Uruguay, his first internationally against the U.S., by the way.
What a dunk from LAFC. Yeah. Oh, we're the best team in MLS history? And check out this guy. Yeah, he just ripped your national team apart.
And also your defender of the year, defender of the year.
Is this your king?
Any other teams outside the playoffs right now that we're looking at saying, ooh, could be?
Can I just be a hipster and just go for it? I guess they're all hipster picks. Vancouver. Because I like Mark Dos Santos. I think their back line's going to all return, basically. Cornelius just 21 years old. Henry's gotten better. And then you've now changed the front office. So I think the idea of how they sign players and who they choose to play, choose who they choose to sign, is going to change. If they can keep Hwang In-bum and get an actual forward on this team, I think they have a chance to improve.
That is the most hipster pick.
Yeah, it's very hipster.
I realize that. Well, I couldn't help myself.
What's a little bit more in the middle? What's more of like a Shops at Old Navy pick?
The obvious... This is going to fit perfectly into that conversation. The obvious one to me is Kansas City.
I thought you were just saying Columbus.
No, I knew it was going to be Kansas City. As soon as I said Shops at Old Navy, you're like, this goes right that direction.
Kansas City. No, I mean, I kept waiting for them to kind of go on a run this year. The fact that they are likely not going to make the playoffs is a bit of a shock. They're just a perennial playoff team. But I think that because of all the injuries that they've had, the Champions League hangover that existed, I still think that there's a lot of talent on this roster. They need to get a striker. They need, like, Peter Vermees needs to sign that guy. But I really think that they're only like one step away from being back into, you know, the top four teams in the West. And so I just think, there's already so much good stuff in place. And with a guy like Peter Vermees as head coach, like, I don't see them not making the playoffs.
Striker, sure. And then see what happens with Fontas, as yeah. Matt Doyle said on this show a while ago. If they can move him, if maybe Nemeth moves out to yeah. make room for that striker, and again, he goes back to Johan Kwaze, all of a sudden you have some money to play with, but ultimately it takes money outside the cap to go get that goal scorer, probably.
Or Peter Vermes says, I'm the GM, I'm going to tear it all down and restart it now before it reaches its end, because maybe. No one can tell me no.
Maybe. I don't see it happening either. But by the way, the hangover is the right word, because Sporting KC, beginning of the year, just pounding beers. Just like early in the party, a little over aggressive. And then like swearing up drinking for the next 2 years. Anybody else here?
What just happened? Just
basically, it's me thinking about my barbecue from the other night. It was really rough for me. My barbecue was my Sporting KC moment. I'm like, you know, in Mexico, knocking off Toluca. And then
I never rallied in college, too. Like, once I was done, I was done. I couldn't, like, come back. So that's quintessential college, Susanna, absolutely. Right there.
I will take either the LA Galaxy or FC Dallas. It seems like it's one or the other for that last playoff spot.
What a lame pick.
Oh. Why?
You ever pick the last team out who probably could have been a playoff team?
Yeah. I play to win, dude.
I hate that you're a part of this.
Because I'm going to remind you next year.
For sure.
About Vancouver.
Yeah? Really?
Oh.
While you're a park ranger in Idaho? Bobby Tony's leaving to be a park ranger in Idaho.
Oh, man. Sounds great.
Oh, you too can stop forest fires, all right, Bobby? Let's see here. Time to talk LA Galaxy, because it is slipping away right now. They're outside the playoffs, and they have a cushy schedule the rest of the way, so that's good for the LA Galaxy. But right now, they are eighth in the Western Conference, and that's not where they wanted to be. And since May 1st, if we're using that split as we do with the Rapids, they're 6-12-2, 1 point per game, and a negative 12 goal differential. Oh, that's awfully tough for them. They're one point back of Dallas and Portland. They're 2 points back of San Jose. They're 3 points back of Minnesota. And they're 4 points back of Seattle and RSL. So there's everything to play for, because the Western Conference is absolutely nutty. And all of those teams, sans Portland Timbers, have played 29 games. So they're on very even platforms. But the Galaxy have Zlatan, Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
And the Galaxy went and got Dennis Toclosa, and he was supposed to change a lot. And they got Christian Pavone, and he was the game changer that was going to give Zlatan the extra push. And Guillermo Barrichello has won in this league, and he's won in Argentina, and he's won in Copa Libertadores. And so he was going to be the difference, and maybe none of that will
be
the difference.
They were all supposed to be the difference.
And so now what?
Well, let me ask you this question. If this Los Angeles Galaxy team in 2019 does not make the playoffs, can you name a bigger failure of a single season in league history? I can only think of one that comes even close. The 2008 Galaxy. David Beckham's first full year healthy. Landon Donovan, Greg Vanney, Edson Buttle, Alan Gordon. But that doesn't come close to this. And right, there, we've had the conversation about, you said earlier, LAFC, the greatest team ever. Right? I don't think it is mutually exclusive to say the greatest X ever more often now than we ever had before.
Are you basing this on, like, talent that they have? Like, you look at that roster and you say, this is...
It is the best, that should be best team that'll make the playoffs.
What about the FC Dallas team that
fell off the
earth?
That was a collapse.
They were the best team in the league the year before. They were, like, Supporter Shield leader midway through that season.
Well, the FC Dallas team driven by Mauro Diaz, Fabian Johnson, and Maxi Urruti. Fabian Castillo, sorry. And we're going to put them in the same category as Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Christian Pavone, Jonathan Dos Santos, Sebastian Legette, Giancarlo Gonzalez.
Legette missed almost the entire season. Pavone
this
got
year?
Here.
No,
Giancarlo Gonzalez came midway through the season, whatever it was. Pavone, okay, I'm sorry. I'm not arguing for them. I'm just saying you can't just start rattling things.
Have they had enough games? What is Pavone's record since he got to Major League Soccer? The Galaxy's record?
Not very good.
Not very good.
Yeah.
Right? It would be the worst single season in League Christie, the biggest failure, whatever you want to call it. But there is there's no mincing words about it. Right, they have had 34 games in the regular season to make the playoffs, even with just Zlatan and Jonah Dos Santos and the players that they've had, and they can't do it. It's almost mind-boggling to think about.
Both Bobby and I were banging away trying to figure out how many games Legette started. It's 22, so he's played a good amount this year, more than he did last year. Their remaining schedule is this. Home Sporting Kansas City, home Montreal, with a huge match for both of those teams because Montreal are on their last leg as well in the Eastern Conference. Then they're at Real Salt Lake, home against hipster 2020 pick Vancouver, and then at the Houston Dynamo, which could be another repeat of last
true.
Year, except on the road this time. That's a depressing flight back.
It would be more realistic if it was on the
road.
From
Houston Hobby.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Are they going to make it? They're going to, like, all this, you know, it could be a huge failure, but they have a pretty cushy schedule, and everybody is mashed in basically within 4 points in the West.
The infuriating part of this conversation, real quick, Dave, is that if they make the playoffs, they're still a favorite, right? They're still a contender. It's this weird balance.
If they were to go to if it went laid out right now, they'd go to RSL round one, which I think most people would pick them in. And then I think they would avoid LAFC, or does it reseed?
I don't know. We'll figure that out because Susanna's going to give us her ideal playoff schedule.
Can
here
I just
in a
say
bit. I'm
going to no.
guess that Zlatan's in there.
Can I just say no?
They're not going to make it.
I think with Dallas's schedule and the Timbers having a game in hand, I do not believe the Galaxy will make it. I think it will come down to the Galaxy and San Jose.
Okay. I personally, and no one out there will be surprised to hear this, have been lighting candles at my Landon Donovan shrine
oh
for the better
God.
Part of 2 months. We need Zlatan in the playoffs,
yes.
Okay? We just need that to happen. As a neutral person that wants to see crazy stuff, I need Zlatan in the playoffs.
Andrew doesn't like soccer.
Yeah, no.
A lot of times I don't. You'd be right about that. A lot of times I don't.
I don't like sports.
Yeah. Sports!
Well, speaking
horrible.
Of sports, there's
They're
more
horrible.
Sports and there's more soccer coming up this weekend, MLS Week 28. The stretch run is
Are we doing
here.
The playoffs?
Should we do those first or should we talk about the games
I don't
coming?
Know. Sorry, I don't run the show. My bad.
Yeah. No, but as Bobby...
You led into something
no,
that
no,
I cut
no.
you off, so
no,
I'm
no, but
you
as
back.
Bobby has proven, you can if you'd like to.
That's true.
Anybody
just take over.
Step in. Orlando City and the Reds.
Okay, Susanna, give me your top 16 biggest moments of a player celebrating a goal against their former
sorry,
team.
Sorry. Oh, going to have to cut that one off and take control.
Holy...
One of us is wearing Old Navy in here, and that means I'm the dad of this
I
podcast.
Only wear Adidas.
Okay? All right.
So on brand.
Orlando City Revs in Orlando this weekend, Saturday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus. I think this is a huge, huge match in the East because if Orlando do not win this at home, I'd say just it's over for them. They made huge improvements this year. They got a new technical director / GM in Muzy. I think he's going to get them back on the right track. He did a good job with Dallas. James O'Connor's improved that defense. They really didn't get much out of Dom Dwyer, but somehow, some way, they are here. The Revs, they lost to NYCFC, which they're still mad about, but Antonio De La Mea can play this game because they appealed that red card and were successful. This could decide, I think, the Eastern Conference field because we're saying that Toronto are in. I don't think that Chicago or Columbus or FC Cincinnati, obviously not FC Cincinnati, who've got the E next to their name, into the standings, have a chance to push up there, but maybe Montreal or Orlando could. But if Orlando lose, it's over for them. But it's been a better season. Is that consolation enough?
No.
For the Lions? Yeah, that's probably the obvious
it's just
answer.
You've
right?
never made the playoffs. Like, no. This was supposed to be the year that they finally got over the line, and it hasn't come together. They haven't been good enough. They're not good enough.
And I don't know that next year will be the big jump for them either because of the contracts on the team still. I think it'll be another year. So they could, I think they'll improve next year similar to how they did this year, which might put them in the playoffs.
It's like
but I think 2 years is there like, hey, we're a good team now and you guys.
Oh, man, that's got to be tough to listen to if you're an Orlando City fan.
I would be
City
so
fan.
Impatient. Like,
Orlando City
fan.
In the playoffs in 2020. Right now. Said it.
They're Bobby, the best. Bringing hope.
They're the best of the way all the teams played outside the playoffs right
didn't
now.
You just have an option to choose which outside the playoff team will be the best going forward and didn't choose Orlando.
I don't think they're the best, but they're in.
Mm.
David, listen to the words.
You also avoided a really big question on that whole thing, which I'm done with.
What was it?
Do they bring back Zlatan? He said the Galaxy would be the best going forward. They literally have the biggest decision to make in Major League Soccer.
Is the question
the
is
best player on their team might be the biggest impingement on their team, and they've not made that decision, and I don't know if they can. Like, I don't know if it's their decision to make. You avoided that question.
Are you explaining to me that the best player on the team is also an impingement?
No, I'm not talking to you anymore.
Okay.
I only talk to these
two. Don't talk anymore. Got it. That's
we
a good game.
We don't talk anymore.
I'm excited for that game. See how the Revs bounce back. But if the Revs lose that game,
we're talking about Orlando.
Then the Revs are in a little bit of trouble because then Orlando City is just a point back of them, and perhaps the Montreal Impact will have pushed forward as well because they play FC Cincinnati at home this weekend. Which, if you don't win that one, Montreal,
you definitely want to play them. That's a one.
How are Montreal still even in this conversation?
Because they played so many games.
I'm so confused.
And so everyone's just been catching up
for
the entire season.
It's like, I know. It's bizarre.
Yeah, their form guide since about the end of June is a lot of red.
Yeah.
A lot of red. But they could still make the CONCACAF Champions League.
Yeah.
They just got to win the Canadian Championship, baby, and that could be their consolation prize this season. There's a another big game at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus, which I think a lot of the neutrals will probably be watching. That is LAFC and Philadelphia in Philly. So if you remember that game against Atlanta, that was awesome.
Oh, and who was the barking? Somebody was barking on Philadelphia saying,
oh, really?
Oh, LAFC. Yo,
coming
yo,
up next.
Yo, yo,
bring
yo.
It.
Yeah,
bring
that's
it.
Right.
Is Vela okay? Anybody know? Will he be available for this game? I probably wouldn't play him if I was I was Bob. I probably wouldn't play him starting in this game.
Yeah. But Bob, though. He wants
to. Yeah, reports are apparently per producer Anders, who we need to really star build around. Hashtag play your kids. Hashtag listen to your producer. says that Vela is training in Philly or is training somewhere, wherever that is.
That's also not official. That's Anders having sources everywhere. He's
correct.
Got his birds everywhere.
Anders is like...
Including on Twitter.
Who's the guy on
I love
Game
that Anders
Thrones?
Has sources. It's great. Yeah.
The guy who pulls the...
I literally...
Varys.
Varys.
When? Just
I just said he has birds
I know,
everywhere.
And that's why I said, who's the guy? Like, I was trying to get the name to help you out with your reference.
Guys, I was away one show, and I can't handle any of you anymore.
Oh, my God.
That's what just happened.
Do the Union have anything to prove here, Dave?
No, they don't. Because the Atlanta win was what they had to prove, which is, can this team, in a game that matters, when both teams are up for it, in front of a big crowd, can they play to their highest level, and can they get results? Two separate things, by the way, and I think they accomplished both of them against Atlanta 2 weeks ago. So yes, if they beat LAFC, it'd be fantastic. Yes, if they beat LAFC, we'll come in next week and say they're favorites for X and X and X, but they've already proven everything that Jim Curtin needed his side to prove, I think, in that Atlanta game.
I know it's getting way ahead of ourselves, Bobby, but Philly obviously need to win this because they need to keep pace with New York City FC, and if they win, they will be tied and actually in first place because they'll have more wins than do New York City FC, but they will have played an extra game. Mm-hmm. But do you hold anything back in this game if you're Jim Curtin at all? Just because of the possibility? I know, like, why am I even talking about
MLS? What are you talking
about? Why am I talking about MLS
Cup possibility?
You're
talking about potential MLS Cup.
Yeah, what am I doing? I'm just
going
to rewind all of that back and say
that. Was a shocking moment from you.
Do you know what, though? The self-awareness, I appreciate that you just, like we're literally like, I'm going to reel this back right now.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, it's like your neck high in a sinkhole, like quicksand, and you're like, I shouldn't have stepped in this quicksand.
I had such a fear of quicksand as a kid because in some movie they step in it by
accident. Princess Bride. Was it the sinkholes?
I thought it was Jumanji or something like that.
Oh, could be.
Like, it could be anywhere, and once you're in, you can't get out.
Right. Should I reel them out? Should I extend a stick to try to pull us out of this one?
Maybe.
By the way, LAFC are in the 2020 CONCACAF Champions League. They now join Atlanta United, who won the U.S. Open Cup. So are they the best bet, MLS-wise, to win this thing? Are they a better bet than Toronto?
So I'm going to say no, because I don't know what their team will look like. That's the big CCL question, is how close to the team you just had will you have going in? And with the way Mark Anthony Kay has played, the way Diego Rossi has played.
Eddie Atuesta.
I'm not saying Zimmerman's going to go, but like, you've already heard those conversations. I think there's a lot of guys who could be on the way out, which isn't a negative to the club for 2020 overall. But I think for CCL, where you haven't played yet, they may not be at their peak. If they don't lose a heavy staple of those players, then yes. You just got answered.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just mulling that over. Just thinking about it.
I'm looking at the way this question is phrased on the rundown, Weeby, and I take issue with something. Are they MLS's best team ever if they don't win MLS Cup? Like, I mean, are we just like, because, you know, like I would look
right
at like,
we're gonna
no, I just like, I'm
right
looking at that and I'm like, well, I mean, it's like right now in this moment, sure. But like, if they don't win it all,
I actually
like,
think that's maybe fair, because if you looked at Toronto FC, they had shown both in a Canadian championship, you can poo-poo that all you want, but it's at least just home and away.
I don't
experience.
Think anyone was poo-pooing it except you.
I thought that there might be people out there that might poo-poo. There was a chance I thought that people would poo-poo.
Old Navy people?
Can we say poo-poo again?
No, I did that three times intentionally, and we hit four, and now that we've reached the statute
Sorry.
Of limitations.
That was just a little tangent, but yes. I was like, wait a second.
No, but seriously, Toronto FC had shown that they could win knockout competitions. They had lost in a final and got there, and then they had won one, and then they came into it with all of that significant experience together. So maybe you're right. Maybe I phrased that incorrectly.
I don't know.
Who else would you want to see in this? The winner of the East will almost certainly get it. Will get in as well. So NYCFC or Philly, Atlanta have already secured it. So it will be one of those two teams. Which of those two would you want to see in it next year more?
I'd like to see NYCFC in it.
Okay.
I would. I think that they're a very complete team. And I think that they have shown that they can win games when they don't have a full roster. I think that there's depth there that would be valuable. I'm more like curious to see how they would do.
It kind of seems like maybe their guys wouldn't be guys that would move on as well. If they re-sign Maxey, their center backs are more like, you know, Chinot and Kyens, and
they already re-signed.
Yeah, you would think like those guys are staying Ring as well. Mitrica just came. Tati Castellanos might be the one. But you would think they could probably
Parks is alone.
Yeah.
I also like the way they match up. I want to see an MLS team for once go on and play the way the Liga MX teams play. Five defenders, five attackers. You five go do your thing. We're not going to get countered, which they could do. Which they do large portions of games.
So when you said anyone, if I don't have to pick from these two, I would say the Portland Timbers for a decent portion of that.
That's a great point.
They can sit and counter, but also Valerian Rodriguez and Blanco won't come back, and they'll sit deep, and Chara will just connect them. And I think from a talent point of view, also from a mentality point of view of like Fernandez played in Mexico. He understands what he's going up against. Jorge Villafana. Yep. I think they'll feel more comfortable.
Okay. I like those shouts. My temperature is rising. My fever is
starting to build. Me and Bobby have come
to
a truce.
I'm getting a little bit sweaty. It's good to hear that. It's good to hear that. I don't want to have any dissension at the table. It's been in the best way, by the way. It's been in the best way. A lot of anticipation. And
guys,
I'm just
fueled by Nation League right now.
You are. And we're going to get to that in a second.
I feel like the St. Vincent and the Grenadines national team.
Oh,
such
my
an up and down.
God. Ooh. Oh, my God.
Before we get out of here and get to U.S. National Team Canada in the mailbag, Susanna, give us your playoffs, if they started today, in the most entertaining, competitive Susanna format possible.
All right. So I actually did put some thought into this, and this is how
I know
sometimes I do prepare for things so if I could like draw it up, this is who I have in the East. This is how it stacks up in the East: Atlanta, NYCFC, Philly, Toronto, DC, Red Bulls, Revs.
So then you have the matchups of
Toronto, DC,
yep,
which I like, Philly versus Red Bulls, which I like a lot, and then NYCFC versus Revs. I think all of these are like very,
very those are
delicious.
Good. Those are good.
In the West, I have LAFC, Seattle, Portland, Mini, San Jose, RSL, and I have the Galaxy squeaking in there in the seventh spot. Which, and this is the one I love. I want the Mini San Jose at Allianz. That I want to, number one, I just want to see a playoff game at Allianz because I just think that environment would be so freaking awesome.
Agree.
But I love both of these teams. I love watching both of these teams, and I would love to see this matchup. And I think it would just be a battle, just grinding it out.
Two teams that rose up. Do we demand that Mateus Almeida watches this from the stands, or do we let him coach on the sidelines?
Yes. Oh, gosh.
Either way.
Because nobody's in Minnesota, nobody's kicking him out of that seat.
Either way,
though. Too polite.
I would like to assume, with a playoff run-up, that Adrian Heath could find a bottle of Malbec. He has 3 weeks to prepare. I'm just saying.
Like, between the Adrian Heath reactions and, like, Mateus Almeida just, like, being just so freaking cool. And, like, I mean, it's just. Like,
this could actually be the future of sports television. An extra pay-per-view option where the two coaches sit next to each other in the stands with the fans. You get the corner view while the game is going on, but you have to pay an extra $6 a month for it. I would take it.
Do we let them drink Malbec during said game?
That's $7. Yes. That's an extra dollar per month for that option.
That's fair.
The answer is yes.
I also really enjoy the Seattle-LA.
Seattle-LA, I think would be, I know. So this is my dream scenario.
I like them.
Which I really
top off
enjoy.
At all of those Eastern Conference, great travels.
Like
New York, Philly, Revs, Philly. Like you're getting away fans packed into the building.
And
I love
that is just
I mean, that's like 700
delicious.
Red Bulls fans just in the corner of talent energy.
Oh, yeah.
The Audi MLS Cup playoffs, they are coming. October 6th is decision day presented by AT&T. We're building up to that, but now, you know, bring it down a notch. U.S. national team time. Kim McCauley from SB Nation will join us in just 1 second to give us some positives and also to give us some negatives. So they lost to Mexico. We knew that. We did the mailbag episode with you, which was a lot of fun and also a little bit almost like, you know, being on the couch in therapy. And now let's get one thought from each of you before we get to Kim. Bobby, we will start with you just because it will go left to right. By left.
I think my thought, Andrew, is just generally that how sad I find it that talking about this U.S. men's national team right now just lowers my mental health. Yeah. It's stressful. There's so much anger. There's so much vitriol. I don't necessarily blame people, right? You miss the World Cup. You go about things that the way U.S. soccer has maybe with both the men and the women. I don't blame people for it, but the consequence of it is like I have to stay off Twitter. I have to watch people's conference. Like it just lowers my mental health when the team is front and center right now, and that makes me sad.
I can give you two. One.
Hold on. It makes me sad that you're sad, Bobby.
Do you not feel the same way? Am I alone?
I think clearly everyone here, from our physical stature.
We got to talk about this.
Yeah. I'll add.
Pull your shoulders back.
Andrew, I think the only thing I'll add to that, too, is maybe try and affix for it. Well, you know, if I'm going to point it out, I'll try and say something, is that there are so many people that know for sure, right? They know for sure that Berhalter's system isn't going to work. They know for sure that young players, they know for sure that U.S. soccer is doomed. And I just think to myself, nobody knows. Like, why do you talk like this? Why do you have so much anger in your tweet, in your tone? Even my conversations with friends, why do you have so much anger in it? When the truth is, you don't really know. A, nobody thought that what has already happened was going to happen to a certain degree. Nobody knows anything about sports. So why go about your conversation way? So that's my two cents on the issue.
Can I offer you a theory as to why people feel that way? I think it's because they used to feel that they did know. They used to feel that they knew that the U.S. would make the World Cup, that they knew that U.S. soccer on the men's side, women's side's a different story, would get better, that we were making progress, that there would be better players down the line. There used to be a feeling, I think, and you guys, if you don't agree with me, please correct me, that people knew that it would get better, and that's the way that they felt. And so when that was kind of that rug was yanked out from underneath them, Kuva and that qualification cycle and all that, and then like the decisions were made slowly and they watch these games and they don't see progress or they don't see something to be excited about or they don't feel like there's a reason to know that it will be better. That's where I think that sort of like negative energy comes from. And then I think once negative energy starts flowing, it turns into a waterfall because nobody wants to be the person standing at the bottom of the waterfall with it just bashing them in the face.
It feels like to sort of like jump on to Bobby's point about how we don't know. I feel like we have been in this period of not knowing for so long. And it's like being in this relationship where like, you know, you're going to like break up, but like, you're just like kind of like prolonging the inevitable and you're stuck in this like place of just like, where are we with this? Like, I don't know, like you're in your own head. And for me, it comes down to the fact that we took so long to hire a head coach. There was valuable time that we could have been spent getting answers and actually finding out what the identity of this team is going to be. Do we have enough talent on this team for them to be the team that we want them to? And I think that you know, they dragged their heels when they were hiring Greg Berhalter. And we sort of knew that was going to happen for so long. Why didn't it happen sooner? Why couldn't we have had more time with this team in place to actually see where we're at and to see if we can compete on an international level? And for me, the fact that we're in this position where we still don't know is the most frustrating thing. Because at this point, I wanted to put all these conversations to bed and all of these bad feelings to bed and get not making the World Cup out of my head and end those conversations because I want to move forward. And it just still feels like we're being lulled back into that narrative that we can't let go of. And it's really, it's just exhausting. It's mentally exhausting. I totally feel where Bobby's at. And I wish that there was progress. Good or bad, you know, like either way, like this is going to work or this is not going to work.
Right. This won't work. Let's move on.
Yes.
Or this will work. Let's double down on it. Do you have anything positive to add? Or are you?
Yeah, I have two things. One, if I'm being as a pretending to analyze soccer thing, I like that Greg Berhalter plays Jorginho Dest as that inverted left back, which I said. So thanks, Greg. I appreciate that. And I thought he played well, probably for the last time ever for the U.S. And two is Lautaro Martinez. Those are my only two things.
Oh.
If you're a USA fan and your rival is hurting, that is the best feeling because your team is not very good.
If Doyle was here, he probably would have done like a 5-minute riff on the joy that was the first half of Argentina-Mexico, but Doyle is not here. Kim McCauley is. She is a soccer editor at SB Nation. You can follow her on Twitter. You absolutely should do that. LGBTQFC is how you can find her there, and she is on the line now. Kim, what's up?
Not much. How are you?
We are doing good, so let's start here.
We're fine.
Okay. That's my default answer, right? I say we're doing good every time, but we all know we're hiding certain things in the public sphere. Let's just start here. Ale Moreno said on ESPN FC that there was nothing from Uruguay to get excited about. Shake off the pessimism before I let you go back to the glass half-empty approach. Give us something to be excited about here. What is there to be excited about with the U.S. national team?
Pick out one positive from the Uruguay game, I would say that
Jackson Ewell looks more up to playing that number six role than anybody else that Greg Berhalter has tried there. And I think that's especially promising given that Ewell isn't, I guess, what you'd call a natural six. He usually plays a little farther forward for San Jose, and seeing that he was comfortable in that role and making more ambitious passes than we've seen Will Trapp and Michael Bradley make in that same role, I thought was really encouraging.
So is that it?
That's a great answer.
I'm just
I feel better already.
Like exhausted everything else. Is there any Josh Sargent feeling of positivity there? Anything else, or should we just go to the glass half empty?
No, I think that Josh Sargent should swing every game that he's fit for this team. Clearly, there are spells of time when he gets marked out of the game by more experienced center backs, and that's obviously a problem with Uruguay, who both sits pretty deep and has really good experienced center backs. But the like flashes of great play, the runs he makes off the ball, the times that he drops deep to combine with his midfielders, and the passes he makes, like there are not other strikers in the pool who have his touch and passing vision. So I think you've got to just like live with the bad stuff and let him work it out. And I thought Jordan Morris was really good. He's somebody that seems very polarizing among the fan base. People love him or hate him. I thought he had an excellent game. And I think that if he can stay fit, he's going to be an important player for the team.
I thought you made a great point about Morris, which is that had Jurgen Klinsmann not anointed him so early on, maybe at the expense of Landon Donovan and other more veteran players, that he wouldn't have some of that vitriol directed his way. I thought that was a great point. You can follow Kim on Twitter, LGBTQFC, at LGBTQFC. You had another tweet that I thought was very entertaining, which is, why are you watching the U.S. if you don't work in this industry? So now it's time to kind of let you loose on the ranting side. Glass half empty, pessimism, where's it come from? What are you thinking?
I mean, we could spend a whole show on this, I guess. I don't want to be, like, rude, though. It is hard to watch a team that is, like, clearly more focused on establishing a style of play and basically doing training drills on the pitch as opposed to, like, focusing more on winning games. And I understand why they're doing it. I understand what Greg Berhalter is trying to accomplish, but if you are if you're just a fan of the U.S. men's national team, I imagine it's very difficult to watch and very frustrating because you'd like to see the team that you support trying their hardest to win games. And I wanted to talk about the goal they conceded because they weren't terrible against Uruguay, but the goal they conceded is, I don't know, indicative of like a lot of problems. Because there's like a series of things that goes wrong in that goal. Like, first of all, it starts with a bad turnover, and then the forward players don't react quickly enough to get pressure on the ball. And then Ewell, as much as I just praised him, clearly looks a little out of place as a defensive midfielder, is still, you know, even though I thought he did better than Trapp and Bradley have done that role for as far as like distribution, defensively, he didn't really know what to do in that situation in that much space. Reggie Cannon is caught way up the pitch, doesn't get back fast enough to help, and then Aaron Long gets turned inside out one-on-one. So there's like a series of problems. There wasn't like one thing that went wrong in that goal. It's like you can see the series of several things that are wrong with that team on that one goal.
Kim, I would actually say that goal is, take away the specific details, for me, the major problem with that might actually be the biggest problem with the team right now, which is separate than the system, which is separate than the process. It's the fact that Christian Roldan did not take the foul at the top of the box. And yes, specifically, you have to take fouls in soccer in 2019. But for me, it's part of a larger problem that where is, and guys, I don't know the right word, so if we have a better word, Jurgen Klinsmann said nasty in the middle of the field. Soccer right now, for all of the tactics, for all of the skill, the best teams in the world play the game at a higher intensity. They fight harder, they compete harder, they run more, they run faster. It's a very simple fact. And for everything else the United States is trying to do, there is almost none of that in the team, it feels to me, Kim, that there is almost no nastiness anywhere, whether it's willingness to take fouls, whether it's ensuring you win every single tackle, whether it's closing down quickly, whether it's really, once they pass your line of confrontation, going into hunt mode. So that's my thought on that goal. It was just a smaller issue, which is really the biggest thing that Greg Berhalter needs to confront.
Well, and I think Berhalter sets the tone for that in in a negative way in two ways. Like, one, the fact that he's always playing a defensive midfielder who's much more of a passer than a ball winner, and he really has yet to start somebody who's a true ball winner in that position, and it doesn't seem like he's going to. Two, and this is something I think we wanted to talk about a little more in depth, is the fact that they play this, like, I guess you'd call it a mid-block, where basically they're not pressing high, they're not pressing aggressively when they lose the ball on purpose, because they want to get in shape and they want that line of confrontation to be around midfield, which I think doesn't really suit this team that well.
It's a really interesting point about the need for a passing defensive midfielder, and can that player also be mean in the middle of the field? Ken, one of the reasons I don't like the mid-block is partially because tactically it doesn't make sense to me, right? Why you cede space in front of you and behind me has never made sense, but it's what Greg Berhalter has always done. I want them to press, one, because they need to be able to create easier turnovers, but two, to go to your point, when you press, you are always competing. It's what I think about with Matias Almeida's man-marking. When you're man-marking, when you're 1v1, you have no option but to be an SOB every single second. And that is the main reason I want this team to press, is just to click into their brains that when you press, you are always running, you are always fighting, you are always competing. Having played in mid-blocks, it's boring, man. Like, going side to side, waiting, cutting out lanes, you can feel your energy and your intensity drop. So one of the reasons I want the team to press is just so that they stay in that mode of, I'm going to kick the crap out of you every second of every game for the full 90 minutes.
I think a more aggressive press would also solve the problem of not really having a true 10. Because we had this conversation before Berhalter really got going when he was hired. It's like, okay, this is a guy whose system in MLS was very highly dependent on having an elite playmaking number 10. And he doesn't have a Pepe Higuain in the U.S. Men's National Team. And one way you can kind of solve for that is by pressing higher up the pitch. If you're a really, really good aggressive pressing team and you're winning the ball high and forcing defenders into mistakes, you don't have to be as creative, as precise with your passes. Your vision doesn't have to be as good because you are winning the ball in situations where there are fewer defenders between the ball and the goal, where you have a lot more space to play into, and you can basically afford to be less precise because you're playing with you have more space to play with. And I think a lot of us thought that was the way Berhalter was going to solve for not having a 10, because there was that the video that U.S. Soccer produced that they put out in January camp, where you could see like a whiteboard of things that they are going over in training, and one of them was like, press aggressively when we lose the ball, and that ended up not happening for whatever reason.
So my question would be, you look at this group and who would be that tough number six? Tyler Adams is that guy. If he comes into the team, just personality alone, does that change enough of it, or do you still need to see a structural change?
I do think it's both, although I think that putting Tyler Adams in that role would help a lot, and I think the chances of Tyler Adams developing a different mindset with the ball and developing a wider range of passing are bigger than the chances of Will Trapp or Jackson Ewell developing into a pit bull who can win the ball.
And if I can even add to that, too, I think the margins gained from Tyler Adams maybe just being a little lesser of a passer but a better ball winner is better than the reverse of that. So, Kim, I'll even add that I'm even okay if he doesn't make up that difference.
Well, especially if Berhalter wants to persist with the mid-block. And, like, as far as we know, there's no reason to believe that he won't. He's always done it. If you're going to play that defensive system, it's hard to get away with not having a ball winner. I think it's easier to get away with not having a true ball winner and playing somebody like Trapp or Ewell as your six if you're pressing way high up the pitch and trying to win it off the defenders and force the defenders into mistakes than if you're going to play the way that Berhalter does. Like, if you want to play that style, you need a midfielder who's aggressive and going to win tackles.
Kim, very interested to get your thoughts on Sergino Dest, who we got to look at. Do you think that he has any future with this U.S. men's national team?
I mean, that's up to him, isn't it? I think he has a future at the national team if he wants to play for the team. We don't know how he feels about this camp and if he and these games, and even if he felt negatively, I don't think he'd tell us. But I would think after these games, and there was a report today that he's been promoted to the IAC senior team full time. Between those two things, the struggles that the U.S. had in these games and him getting promoted to IAC's first team, if I were him, I'd be very much in wait and see mode. I would at least want to hear the Netherlands out.
We will see what Serginho Dest does. It will be very, very interesting to witness that and witness the reaction no matter which way it goes. Look, U.S. soccer Twitter is an interesting place, Kim. You know that. We know that. It can be fun. It can be heart-wrenching. It can be downright depressing at times. Canada, Nations League, it's coming up. It's a new thing that we're still trying to explain to Bobby, and we will, I promise you, get there someday. But I'm nervous about Canada, and I'm nervous about World Cup qualifying, and I think justifiably so. What does that say at this moment with the U.S. men's national team?
It doesn't feel great, does it? Can you recall a time previously when you thought, I am not sure if we're going to beat Canada? I don't think I've ever had that thought in my life before right now.
I mean, I turned on curling at the Olympics.
That's a good point. Soccer would be the, you know, it changes everything. So World Cup qualifying, it's coming. How do you think we will be in a year? Try to prognosticate a little bit. Try to just imagine what it'll be like. And I know that might be tough, but a year from now, do you think all of this will feel like we were overreacting, like we were chicken littles, or will it feel like we were on the right track as far as analyzing Greg Berhalter's team?
I feel like we're going to be in the same place where they're doing well enough. They're winning most of the games they should win, and they're not getting knocked out of World Cup qualifying, but it's like also not clicking yet. And the team has a lot of the same fundamental problems, and we're going to be asking, I think, the same questions. It's like, is this philosophically the right thing to be doing, and are they making progress? I don't see anything changing, really.
All right, well, crystal ball's out. We'll see what happens. On to maybe more positive things. We shall see. Canada won two games. That's been Kim McCauley, soccer editor, SB Nation, at LGBTQFC on Twitter. Definitely follow her there and follow all our work at SB Nation. It is good stuff, not just on U.S. men's national team, on the women's national team, on Major League Soccer and soccer in general. Kim, thank you so much for joining us, all right?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's move on to Canada. Normally the domain of pessimism and woe is me, but perhaps not anymore because, Dave, this was an ideal international window for our friends to the north. They won two games against Cuba, 1-6-0, 1-1-0, but, you know, whatever, points, that's what matters in Nations League for them, and wins, they got those. And wouldn't you know it, some CONCACAF upsets.
Yeah.
El Salvador, Dominican Republic, you would think that El Salvador would win. You would think wrong. You called this game,
didn't you? I did call this game. It was fascinating. It was fun. El Salvador's been really good. I thought they were one of the most fun teams at the Gold Cup. So I was shocked on many levels to see this. They came out in their first game in Nations League, and it was like 35,000 in the building, chanting the anthem. Fito Zelaya's back. They're super pumped. And then they come to DR, who looked terrible in their first game. And soccer is soccer, baby. Set piece goal 7 minutes in, and then like pure confidence across this Dominican Republic team. At times, unreal confidence, like trying to chip guys from midfield and stuff, and it worked. It all worked out, and it was so much fun.
Oh, the Bronx was loving it.
Yeah.
No doubt about that one.
I was in Florida, and I was like, man, I wish I was in New York for the one dude who owns a Dominican Republic soccer jersey. And everyone else like, I don't know, Ronaldo plays for our team. And you're like, well, yeah, his name's Ronaldo Vasquez, not Cristiano Ronaldo. But sure, yeah, we'll go with that. And then the Bermuda upset.
Panama.
Yeah.
They lost as well. So
I also called that game, and I called that game with someone who played for Guyana. I think he felt a little more of the like Caribbean underdog love because he's gone into Panama and Mexico and, you know, Honduras and expected to lose. And he was like quietly throwing one of these on the second Nicky Wells goal. And it was awesome. They sacked completely behind the ball. They countered. Panama dominated possession. Gabby Torres was phenomenal once again, and they just could not score. And to look at Americo Gallega's face on the sideline of like, oh, my God, this is my first home game. Now I got to go do a press conference was like, oh, yeah, dude, this did not go well for you.
No. I was we'll save that story for another day. Martinique and Trinidad and Tobago, they drew two games. There were some goals from some MLSers there.
Trinidad was terrible.
It's not that surprising.
They were up 2-0. It looked like the game they've been waiting for. They haven't won a game in 11 games, over a year, and they gave up 2 goals at home. So it was tough. Sorry. Had
Jones, Kevin Molina scored, Jordy DeLem scored for Martinique as well. So some good results there for Martinique to get 2 draws. Nations League continues in October and November. For the U.S., that means you finally play Canada. So they'll first play Cuba. That one's going to be at Audi Field on October 11th, then October 15th at BMO. Canada and the United States, John Herdman says, is a cup final. This is the game we've been waiting 10 to 15 years for. We know from talking to Dwayne Rollins that Canada, based on ELO and the FIFA rankings, essentially has to be perfect.
Which also, the El Salvador loss and the Panama loss were huge for Canada.
Massive, massive. But now the onus is on Canada. They have to win. Yeah. They have to beat the U.S. They have to do something that they don't.
So one of the big things that went under the radar is Daniel Henry got a red card against Cuba, and I think he's the best center back on Canada. That is a huge loss for a team where their entire struggles are defensive. They started Richie Larea in this window at right back. He was phenomenal, but all of it is going forward. So I'm not saying he can't play the position, but now you're going to have him defend consistently, probably against Christian Pulisic, and then you take away Daniel Henry next to him, and on the other side, Kamal Miller was better at left back because he defended. But he's not going to go forward, which I think is fine, because your threshold right now is, can you stop us from giving up goals? But you take Daniel Henry out of that back line once again, and now it's a little less sure. Do you slide Kamal Miller in at center back? Then what do you do at left back? So there's a lot of question marks still for Canada. I think the one that I feel comfortable with now after watching them is, I think Jonathan David will start up top against the U.S., and I think they're going to target one of the center backs and try and press them into mistakes and then try and hit over the top to David. And I don't know that that's his best position. I don't know that not having Cavallini or Laren in is the best, but I think that's what Canada is going to try and do.
At this point, it's not Laren, though, right?
He looked okay. Yeah, Cavallini's a better player right now. Laren looked okay, and if he gets another month of club soccer under his belt, maybe.
Let's just kind of transition semi-gracefully into the mailbag right here. We had a question from Kurt Larson, the man, the myth, the legend, the pot stirrer up there up north, about make your best 11 using U.S. national team and Canada players. Who would you take on the Canada team for the U.S. and vice versa?
Why don't we save this for next month?
Oh, good point.
Why don't we save it for like...
Send us your answers. Bobby, yeah. Well done. Take over the show. Host this thing. 401-206-0MLS at extratime.com.
By the way, I would build my entire team around Mark Anthony Kay. Facts.
Okay, so there you have a start to that. This was an interesting one that we can do right now from Micah Bennett, and maybe where we'll end this show. Of your current U.S. national team best 11, how many would you take over the 11 that started against Ghana in 2014? And I have this Ghana roster right here, and I'll take you through it back to front. Tim Howard at goal. Would you take anybody but Tim Howard in this scenario? Is Zach Steffen or Breguzon in this conversation, or is that one for one for 2014? It's got to be Tim Howard.
Are we talking 2014 version of Tim Howard? Obviously, Tim Howard.
That was a good question.
Yes.
The hard part is that is Greg Berhalter coaching both teams?
Don't think of it that way.
Yeah, well, you have to, right? Because of the passing out of the back. But you're saying who would win 2014? I get it. Okay, Howard. I get what's going on.
So one for one for 2014. Let's go to, how about right back? We have Fabian Johnson here. So you're going to take Fabian Johnson, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No offense to Reggie or Nickley, but come on, Fabian Johnson. Jeff Cameron. Mm-hmm. You taking Jeff Cameron, or it would be Aaron Long?
Or Walker Zimmerman.
Or Walker Zimmerman.
2014 version, though.
2014 version.
Yeah. Jeff Cameron.
So you're going Jeff Cameron. Matt Beisler is here. 2014 Matt Beisler, which is coming off of Defender of the Year, had some huge performances in CONCACAF, and was good at this World Cup.
And my other option is 2018 John Brooks. 2019? Like, who's my other?
I don't think. I guess you could say John
Anthony
Brooks
is the option there.
Okay. Jab. Or Beisler.
I guess I would take Brooks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's one for 2019.
3-1. 3-1.
DeMarcus Beasley at left back. Let's not even have that.
4-1.
4-1. Kyle Beckerman at defensive midfield.
Over a Michael Bradley or Tyler Adams.
Let's say it's Tyler Adams.
And then,
for the sake of argument,
with Weston McKennie and Sebastian Legette in front of him.
Probably, yeah.
And then Christian Pulisic, Josie Altidore, and we'll say Jordan Morris or Paul Areola.
Yeah, so...
Or Timothy
Weah. So Dempsey's going to win the Jordan Morris, Paul Areola or whatever. Mm-hmm. You have Josie up there. Josie's Josie, but I think you probably...
Although, let's also remember, Josie went off injured like 8 minutes into this game and didn't play the entire tournament.
Right.
Which is, I guess, a little bit different than 2019, but not that much different, right?
No, I'm just saying... Well, yeah, okay, fair.
Hey, okay, so Tyler Adams over Kyle Beckerman.
But then, like 6 seconds after this game, you were starting Chris Wondolowski and Clint Dempsey at top and Bradley at the 10.
For sure, that's fair. That's fair.
We're at 4-2 right now. Michael Bradley, 2014, or Mike?
I mean, Jermaine Jones is going to win this argument as well. Let's be over, like, what, Sebastian Legette?
Or Weston McKennie.
Or Weston McKennie. Jermaine Jones is winning that argument.
Okay.
So Jermaine Jones wins.
Five Schalke guys, head to head.
Yeah. How about Bedoya? And I guess Bedoya would be what?
On the right wing. He would be the Jordan Morris or Paul Ariola or Timothy Weah.
I would take Bedoya.
Yep.
Okay.
At this point, he was playing regularly in France.
Then it's Bradley. I guess you kind of are equating Bradley with Pulisic. It's very loose because it's a difference.
No, you would do Dempsey versus Pulisic.
Oh, okay. Fine. Who are you taking?
Wow, that made a lot
harder.
Do this.
Yeah, that did. I can't do this right
now. I don't think anyone's going to take any of these.
Oh, God.
Any of the 2019 guys.
I mean, and that's also a state of the program thing. You're talking about a World Cup team who had qualified and who had won qualification and had done a Dos Acero in Columbus. They'd done all the things that we want the 2019 to be able to do, right? So it is a little bit unfair the way that this question is posed, but it's still a really, really interesting question. Before we get out of here.
I think it'll be the most interesting in 2022 when you say Pulisic has 4 years as a national team player, McKennie has 4 years as a national team player. Maybe a guy like Jermaine Jones, who's in their prime, has come into the team, and Beasley has come into the team.
And we're super hopeful that they're at the World Cup, which, you know, I still remain confident that that will be the case.
And maybe Efra Alvarez is on the squad.
Some heartbreak over the time. By the way, go read Tom Marshall's piece on Efra at ESPN FC. It was really, really good. Quick riff, and then we're out of here. It's been a little longer than normal, but I've enjoyed it. Costa Rica international winger Randall Leal to Nashville SC on a TAM deal from Saprissa.
Yeah.
So, Dave, I know you were...
Can play out wide, can play inside as a 10, and I think he's decent at both. He's not an electric guy down the wing, but he's a good possession player. And I think when you look at maybe what they're going to build, you can play through him. So if Mukhtar is like the, you know, your Almiron out in open space, he can play alongside him and help set him up and find through balls and stuff like that. So I like this signing. It's scary, the moments where you feel very similar to FC Cincinnati. I'm not saying Nashville's going down that road, but it feels like an Alan Cruz signing of like, I like Alan Cruz. And they signed him. I was like, I'm pretty pumped about that. That's a pretty good under-the-radar signing. But you need the over-the-radar ones to then, you know, fill it in.
So right now, Henny Mukhtar probably at the 10. You have David Akam. You'd think at left wing. You would probably figure Leal at right wing if you're going to play a 4-2-3-1, which I don't know that they will, but it seems like they might. Looking for a forward, looking for other pieces.
Well, they have two forwards. Daniel Rios could score goals in Major League Soccer. Giant body, good, young Mexican striker. That actually is one where I don't know you want to go into the season as him as your starter, but I think next year he'll score 7 or 8 goals in MLS.
Okay. Before we get out of here, give me a sell on the call-up. Most recent episode, Susanna.
Oh, gosh.
We give this to Kaylin, and by God, if we give it to Kaylin, we're going to give it to you.
Oh, that's lovely. No, we it was amazing, actually. Jill and I happened to be in Cincinnati at the same time for two separate shoots. So we sat down with Liz Summers, who is the...
PR legend.
Yes, literally.
Of the Revs,
I mean, she has stories for days, some of which obviously could not be recorded. But just it was a really, really interesting to get her perspective on the league because she's been around so long, and you know, she's kind of a gatekeeper to players and coaching staffs, and how that relationship works between them and the media, and it was just a really fascinating conversation, and yeah, it was really fun, and we drank wine, so
there you go.
Yeah, listen.
There you go. Best way to get stories to come right out. Extra dollar if you would like
Cincinnati wine or Ohio wine from the Ohio Valley.
Jill brought it. I'll have to ask her if it was local.
Gotcha.
Not sure.
A micro vineyard.
It would be
better if it was. That's it for us. Subscribe, rate, tell your friends about Extra Time. Hope you enjoyed the show. I think this was a fun one. Big thanks to SB Nation editor Kim McCauley for joining us and talking U.S. national team and, you know, both walking us toward and backwards from the cliff. We're out of here. Enjoy your weekend, everybody.